Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here, and sitting across from me is
Mike Cosentino, and we're doing Democratic Perspective.
And we have two guests today. They're running for the state Senate, and they're running from the state House from District 6, right?
Yes.
Here where we live.
Yes, right where we live. And I guess let's have the candidates in. Wade, do you want to introduce yourself, tell folks a little bit about you?
Yeah, I'm Wade Carlisle from Holbrook, Arizona. I grew up in Sholo, Arizona, so I didn't move very far. I grew up in agriculture. Grew up on a ranch in Sholo, Arizona, and from there went to college at Northern Arizona University. Northern Arizona is a big theme for me. And I ended up back in Holbrook due to matrimony and... I've lived there. I've served four terms on the city council there. I've worked for Navajo County. I've owned two businesses in Holbrook, the movie theater there and the hardware store. I just recently sold that. I worked for the BNSF Railroad as a conductor. And that's pretty much sums up the last 47 years.
Wow. And so you're deep roots in Arizona, your family?
Fourth generation.
And you come from a sort of ranching family?
Yes.
On a ranch. Wade was talking earlier at a door meeting about how if anything happens to you when you're out on the ranch in the old days, you got a serious problem because, the fire department, the EMS guys are a long, long way away.
My ranching wife, Arizona ranching lady, before she passed away, reminded me that she was very good at castrating.
With that
animals.
Let's move to Felicia.
Felicia French.
I don't know how to follow that.
Wade is running for the state Senate, and Felicia is running for the state House. And there's one other member who's running from the state House as a Democrat. Couldn't be with us today. We'll have him on the show at a later time. He's the mayor of Holbrook, and he had
He has a name. I think it's Bobby Tyler.
Bobby Tyler, yeah. So, Felicia, introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about you.
I'm Felicia French, and I am running for Legislative District 6, House of Representatives. My background is I'm a third-generation Arizonan, and I started my military career. I started when I was 17 as a private, and I retired as a colonel in 2010. My background is extensive in healthcare because I started as a medic, Army medic, and went on to nursing school at Arizona State University, got my bachelor's of science there as a nurse. And throughout the years, something I always wanted to do was fly helicopters. So I branch transferred to fly medevac and did that for about 6 years. And then as you make rank in the military, like so many things, you do other things, other jobs. And my career path was varied, but mostly in the healthcare arena. And I was a commander for a total of 7 years, three different units. My last assignment or deployment was in 2009-2010 in Afghanistan, where I was a senior medical advisor. And then I came back home to Arizona to retire. And, I thought I was retiring. I did a lot of community service for the Civil Air Patrol and Tonto Room Search and Rescue in the area. And Take Pride Pine Strawberry. There's some organizations that do a lot of community good. And then I decided to do this.
So most of your life was in the military, even though you're grounded here. And if you're like other people in the military, you were all over the place, right?
Yes.
Afghanistan and so forth and so on.
Well, yeah, Felicia, I have to mention, I have to say, I'm ex-military, but not like your ex-military. It's certainly among my people, being a colonel is like, that would be amazing. But for anybody's people, going from a private to, and I don't want to say especially for a woman, but you know, being a colonel in any branch of the military is just a couple of steps down from God. You know,
The other thing I wouldn't mess with Felicia. She's good at following you places, like to this radio station. She's very good at following people.
We lead
a lot of people to the radio station for interviews. And, man, she was I couldn't have escaped her if I wanted to.
So the question, here's a convoy.
That's right. We went over the great smell of diesel in the morning that I miss, actually. But I'm going to ask the tough question. I'm going to start with Wade here. Wade Carlisle, running for the state, Arizona State Senate from our district. And Felicia, you're going to get to think about it because we're going to come at you with saying, why in this toxic partisan environment? You know, I'm setting this up, and this is where Steve starts to talk. That, you know, you have to kick us under the table to get us to stop talking so you can. But city elections are nonpartisan, as I recall. I mean, you don't run as a Democrat or a Republican, even though everybody kind of knows. But go ahead. Why do you want to be an Arizona State Senator?
Well, they came and asked me twice. I told them no the first time because you don't get paid very much money, and it takes 6 months out of your life every year for the term, and you have to take a leave of absence from your job, and it costs you money to run for politics at this level, particularly in Arizona. But what really drove me to run in my issue, since they asked me and I finally said I would, was because in the city of Holbrook, we rely on highway user revenue funds.
HERF.
That's HERF funds, so we'll refer to the acronym a lot.
Yeah.
And after the recession, the state legislature cut that funding. And
they swept it all.
Well, not quite all, only half.
Only half.
But
I'm
when
sorry,
you take
right.
half of... county or a city, you go down and you have no money for capital improvement. And we're not talking about adding roads in Holbrook. We're just wanting to maintain them.
Right.
And we're running into problems where we're using general funds to do that. And the problem is we are falling behind.
Sure.
And there is absolutely no movement with the state legislature to address those issues. And Holbrook's back growing again. They brag about how we're growing. But they're cutting income tax or corporate income tax while we're growing, and we're not seeing any of that money flow back so that we can move
forward. That's because they're cutting corporate taxes, and they don't have a deep appreciation of rural needs. I mean, I think one of the things that Sylvia Allen has been extremely ineffective at is looking after the interests of rural Arizona. Partisanship, Democrats, Republicans aside, she has not looked after our interests. She has not tried to protect people like in Holbrook who need services. It's a fairly small town and a lot of difficult economic situation.
So, wait, it would be fair to say, and this is not exactly a new message we get around here, but I want to crystallize it in that the sometimes testy relationship between the Arizona state government and cities and towns in Arizona, you have some issues there. And as do many, it's hard to talk to a city official any time in the last 10 years and not have the unfair relationship, they would say, or a county person for that matter, between the state government.
I wanted to ask them both, Mike, about education, because
we got to hear about her why.
Yes,
we got to see why she's running first.
Okay.
Actually, it goes way back to when I was a kid. I grew up watching the news with my family, like many people did back in the 60s and 70s. And my daughter always says I'm a freak because I was very concerned about what was going on in the world since I was little. I couldn't sleep at night worrying about the Vietnam War and the famines and throughout the world and all that. So I've always been very concerned and very empathetic towards everybody else's plight in the world. And I just couldn't be happy just myself. You know, I was very comfortable life as a child here growing up in Arizona. And when I was in the military, of course, you're apolitical in the military. But things didn't think too much about it. And then this November 8th, I think it hit a lot of people in the gut. And leading up, that whole year leading up, the civil discourse was so disgusting to me. I was embarrassed as an American to hear my country, our election process being degraded as it was, and our selection of the candidates across the board. And I started thinking about running, and actually I had several people approach me as well, asking me, why don't you run, You have so much background and you care so much. Yeah. And like many Americans, you think, well, what do I know? I'm not a politician. I'm a lawyer. Most people think you have to be a lawyer to run for office, or a big businessman or something. And as a female, again, there's not many females running, and I knew all too well how critical they're going to be of how you look, how you talk, that thing's much more so than a male candidate. But I figured if I can endure the military for 32 years, what I had to do, and with that attitude, then I can do this. But more importantly, because I just couldn't stand it anymore. I care too much about my country. I did not serve in the military to see it be degraded like it is. And a lot of soldiers, killed. That's not what they fought for. The diversity in the military is so strong compared to the rest of the population. I served with so many people from immigrants that aren't even U.S. citizens were Absolutely. Serving in the military. Yeah. And they were just stellar soldiers.
Yep.
And traveling around the world, I've traveled to over 30-something countries, and I see how involved we are. We have to be. We can't be isolationist. All the things that they're currently espousing right now, the current administration, and I'm against, vehemently against, and I felt like I have to have, well, I think sometimes the Democrats, are the silent majority, and because we tend to be a little bit more conscientious about trying to upset people and being more consensus building, and realize you can't, the good, evil prevails when the good do nothing.
So we have this far right wing legislature, and when they do the polling, Arizonans are really not that far right wing. And yet the right wing of the Republican Party controls the legislature. Mike's tired of hearing about it, but I'm always appealing to a responsible Republican. Yeah. I don't care how conservative you are, to run against Paul Gosar in Mike's district. Show us and I've talked to Republicans and they think it's impossible to get out of their primary, taking positions like that. But I did want to go to education because I heard you both speak about it.
Just to be clear, don't forget, you have Tom O'Halloran here where the microphones are. And I live 15 miles down the road where we have Paul Gosar on the federal level as far as our representation goes. It's bad. It's not hard enough that we have a bi-county area, where we have a bi-county split, Sedona, not down the middle, but certainly in two.
And Gosar is bat crap crazy, right?
And Coke.
I mean, these conspiracy theories. I mean, good Lord.
He insults bat crap crazy. I mean, the phrase is, but it's gone beyond that. I'm having a little trouble. I'm a sense of humor kind of guy, but there's nothing funny about Paul Gosar. He's cruel and inhuman. And the other gentleman that you're talking about that goes back to November 8th, we're talking about cruel and inhuman, especially when it comes to education.
Okay, Felicia, let's just start on education, because I know both of you guys are motivated a lot to run for office because of the educational cuts. Mike's a former teacher. I'm a former student.
Probably not a good one, but we'll go ahead.
Well, as most Arizonans know, that we're on the bottom of the totem pole here for education spending, and our teacher pay and student graduations, all those dropout rates are high, all those things that are poor are indicators of a poor education system. And I'm a firm believer, as an educator myself, I teach at Mesa Community College as a sustainable world there, and I was teaching was also involved with the at-risk youth program that the Arizona Guard ran for several years for high school dropouts. So I'm quite familiar. Plus, I have a daughter who went through our education system here. And we need to, that is the key. If you had to pick one thing to fix, at least address the evils of the world and the harm, is education. And you have to start young. And pre-education, pre-K education, start out with that. And an equitable education. And as well as elementary school all the way to trade schools and university, we need to look at those things. There's no one solution to that, the education problem, but obviously one of the biggest ones for here in Arizona, I would guess, is the funding of it, and the charter schools and the vouchers program is not working for us. It doesn't. It takes away money from the lower socioeconomic school districts. It takes it away to give it to other districts. And the families that do charter schools or voucher, they can leave that area, but the lower socioeconomic, they can't afford to move. So they're stuck in a school district that's getting poorer and poorer. And more students per teacher ratio. And it's been proven statistically that that's not healthy for the students. They need to, especially at a lower elementary grades, they need a lower student to teacher ratio so the teacher can take care of those instead of just dressing the middle. Then the really brilliant kids get left behind, and the ones that need a little bit more help get left behind.
It's really that simple, Felicia, and you hit it right on the as far as I'm concerned anyway. This is an opinion show, so we get to do opinions, and that's that charter schools, you know, an interesting idea and a good idea in some cases, but the ultimate result is they're draining money from public schools, other public schools. Charter schools are public schools, yes. Other public schools, district schools, are becoming poorer and poorer because of the chart. And then you throw the voucher thing on top, which is, you know, we've done whole shows on, and we will be doing more whole shows on.
Mike and insist on one educational show every 5.5 weeks.
but your other point is well taken too. I mean, it's just the one thing that makes a difference. I just went to an Arizona town hall. By the way, the Arizona town hall for the first time addressed pre-K through 12. By the way, it was a K through 12. They said, no, we're calling this a pre-K, but we want to acknowledge exactly what Felicia French just said, candidate for the state Arizona House.
Right, against people like Bob Thorpe.
That's right. She has
the mysterious non-existent
constitutional expert, by the way.
Yeah, constitutional expert. Read his book, and you'll see what he knows about the Constitution. Yeah.
We'll entertain anybody's thoughts on what kind of constitutional expert Bob Thorpe is.
So wait. Education, and I know your wife's a teacher, right?
That's correct. My wife is a teacher, and this year her class size is 27 students, which is actually larger than the state average. 2017, it was 23 students per teacher. The national average is 16.5, something like that. And that's the problem. When we first went to Holbrook, her class size was 16 students. And the classrooms are small, so we're cramming a lot of kids in there. And it's simply funding that we can't hire enough teachers. We can't afford to hire additional teachers, even though actually in Holbrook we do have the space.
And this is not higher math. Well, what grade do you teach?
Fourth grade.
Okay, so you hire enough fourth grade teacher. Another fourth grade teacher, class sizes go down. If you can't afford to hire enough, so it's really that simple, folks. This is not, like I said, higher math. Go ahead.
So both of you believe it's really the core of what's really wrong with the state legislatures. They're not funding education as they should. So we're 50th in the nation per spending.
And they're proud of it. They're happy about it. That's what I don't get. If there was some reason, if there was some state catastrophe. But this is an intentional thing, and I know if you guys can explain why, great.
The program, Wade was a practical guy, so all he wanted to do is move us from 50th place to 25th place.
Well, it's not just me. The Arizona Town Hall, that's their goal as well, is to move just to middle of the road. Yeah. And so if we can move class sizes from – I think we're 48th. Nevada and Idaho's ahead of us with class sizes. To 25th, that would get us around 16 students per teacher, and that would help a lot when you're talking about meeting the needs of students. When it comes to vouchers, I don't have a big problem with vouchers. Even in Holbrook, there's a bus that will bus kids to the other school district, which is Joseph City School District. And kids go there and perform better for various reasons. There's all sorts of reasons that it's not one common reason. So I like the whole school choice idea. The issue that I have with the charter schools is that they're not under the Department of Education. They're under their own area.
Their own board.
The public education, the public schools have to answer 49 questions when the audit comes to them. and it's detailed. They want to know where the money went and how it was spent and who's getting paid. Every dime is accounted for, and it's accounted for in the audit. Charter schools answer 12 questions. And we don't know how much money, when that money comes from the state legislature for the student and it goes to those charter schools, we actually don't know where it all goes.
And your opponent's charter school that was rated F, Sylvia Allen's charter school that she started, teaches in there part-time. Her daughter provides meals for charter school. It's got an F rating. And I saw, well, in the Arizona Republic, you could check her response, which is to talk all around the subject. And how can that be the educator? She claims to be interested in education. She is the head of the education committee. And yet the charter school that she started, it got rated an F. It got the lowest rating of any charter school could get.
Well, what I also find interesting about that is that it was the state legislature that passed a bill to mandate the state superintendent to come up with a mechanism to measure students, and that's what they use is the AZ Merit, so that they can grade schools. So it was actually the state legislature that set that procedure in place. So it's the Republican legislature with the Republican governor deciding that they wanted to grade schools. And so when she goes back and says, hey, it's not fair or whatever that is, it's like, well, you guys did it because this didn't happen 10 years ago. This happened last year. So for her to go back and then claim that something went wrong, it's a Republican legislature that created the grading system.
For a political purpose, by the way,
exactly.
Not for an educational one.
And there it is.
There it is.
She did it. It's all her deal. I don't know why she's going against it.
She made your education committee, so she just didn't like the results of this minimal sort of
survey. You could say you knew what you signed up for or something like that.
I've never heard that
exactly.
before.
Yeah. So education is a very important issue to both of you. What else as a state legislature can you do besides replace, in Wade's case, in your crazy person, and in your case, a mystery man? We played a game, where in the world is Bob Thorpe, for a long time, trying to figure out where he was from. So your background is very clear. I mean, there's no doubt about it. You were in the military, 36 years?
32
years. And
my question.
And so you weren't really political until fairly recently, or you?
I couldn't say I was political. Yeah. I had opinions. Of course, we all did in the military for the most part, but we had to be neutral, and as it should be. You don't want people espousing their political views. But quite frankly, back then it wasn't as polar as it is now, and to me it's a moral imperative, a moral issue. A lot of the former generals are speaking out and they're afraid that we're going to have a World War III with the current administration.
Well, you know what? You didn't have to. I mean, I came out of the military as an independent also. And because you knew that the other side wasn't bat crap crazy. In other words, they weren't going to cut education. Yeah. Nobody was going to cut education. Who's stupid enough to cut education? Who's stupid enough to take WIC away? You know, one of the bedrock programs of America, feeding women and children, you know, regardless, why would you cut a WIC program? That would have never happened back when you and I were getting out of the military and living our lives and saying, well, either side, and it used to be true. That's no longer true. We started the show for that reason. It just stopped being true that both sides, the loyal opposition, you know, Walter Lippmann wrote the wonderful essay in the 30s about, you know, what you do after you lose an election. You become the loyal opposition and you support those programs that make sense. And when if the other side's got a good idea, you support it. You don't oppose it simply because they're the other side and all of those things, which you guys are going to change down at the Arizona legislature with some help, hopefully, of some other Democrats and a few somewhere down there is Steve's mysterious, hidden, reasonable Republican. They're down there somewhere. We think so.
We have two former Republicans sitting in the studio, right? Both were Republicans at one point, and it became sort of untenable. And, of course, we hear this a lot. You know, I was a Republican, but, well, you know, we heard it at the door meeting. I was a Republican, and, well, now I'm not so much anymore, which is a Democratic meeting.
But I want to know how you're going to win.
am I going to win?
Yep. Well, both of you. You can be thinking about it.
Mm-hmm. I plan on just hitting as many of the all the towns that I represent and that are in my district as much, at least twice the whole time.
Name some of those towns just for
Well, the fun. Major ones are, of course, are Sedona. Flagstaff is the biggest town. Uh-huh. Payson, Pine, Strawberry, uh-huh. all that area. All the way to Holbrook. And it covers four counties, and that's going to be hard for us because it is spread out. If you were representing a district, LD, in Phoenix, you could just cover a few blocks and hit everyone, and even though it's a lot of the same amount of people, roughly, just ours are spread out, of course, because we're in a rural area. So we have rural issues, and I'm going to address the rural issues as opposed to the state or federal, because that's what we're supposed to be doing.
Absolutely.
And I want to go listen to everyone, go to each town. Each town seems to have different issues. In Payson and Pine right now, internet has gone out numerous times. We're dependent on the south. We have two cellular companies, and they share the same cable. If it goes out, everybody's out. And for a couple of days sometimes, and there's times when the power and everything goes out at the same time. And your landline. So we've had some problems with that, and it's been quite frequently. And so those are in areas that probably aren't the same in other areas that we need to address. A lot of people in Payson have asked me about that. What am I going to do about that?
And that is something government can help with. In other words, I think that's a great issue.
Rural electrification in the 30s was a big deal. There's no reason we can't have high-speed internet.
Right.
We don't even have the kind of high-speed internet in Sedona that would bring think tanks and larger businesses. It's just not fast enough for them. They can't carry enough weight.
Wade, how are you going to win?
Yeah.
Well, when I ran for city council the first time and people asked me the same question, is that I would say I want to be part of the decision-making process. And the reality is education, we can solve that. It could get solved in one legislative session, same with transportation. But every day you're going to be getting multiple bills that are coming before you, and you're going to have to make a decision on those bills, and it's not going to be easy. They're all difficult. When issues come to the state legislature or even the city council, they're all hard. If they were easy, then the city manager would have made that decision.
Right. That's right.
So I have to make that decision of how is this going to impact me as a person, as a small business person. I've owned businesses, I've run businesses, a local school teacher, and rural Arizona, and that's the way I view things first and foremost, and that's how I'm going to follow my business or the decision-making process as these bills come to us. Now, the way I'm going to win that is, so far, when I've talked to people, even conservatives over in Navajo County, they say, you know, they're starting to see the problems in their school systems, and there's a lot of those conservatives that are school teachers, and it's hurting them.
Right.
And they're saying, I'll support you because we need a change. And I'm not sitting here saying we're going to be first in funding in the nation. We're just trying to get us up so that we can provide a good product in our public schools. In all of our schools, anybody that goes to get a public education, and by the way, the charter school is a public education because it's publicly funded.
Absolutely.
That you're going to have your student, your child, funded at an appropriate level for them to get a good education. And that's all I'm about. And the current process, the current direction we're going now, we are not achieving that. And I have not run into a single person, even conservatives, that don't see that. But what I get from the state legislature is, no, we still need to cut. There's still waste out there, and we need to cut more.
Well, that's it. I see no hope. And so I got Wade Carlisle here, the guy that's running against Sibley Allen for the state senate, and I want to tell him. Now, Sibley Allen has said, and I'm referring to Payson Roundup and Verde Independent print kind of boilerplate stump speeches, that she supports education. And that, so in other words, anybody who read anything or even listened to Sibley Allen in the last would have thought that it would have come away and saying, well, she's going to support education. So her actions have not followed up anything she said. So I think they call that a lie.
Mike is making a good point in person. The people I know have talked to her. She's very pro-education. She talks about how much she loves education and stuff. And then she turns around and votes to to defund the system that's going to do this. And also, frankly, maybe line her pockets a little bit. So let's go to Felicia. So we're in a difficult situation because the Arizona legislature just won't fund education properly. We can't get it done. The Republicans who are pro-education, like Tom O'Halloran, who back in the old days was a Republican, were just sort of run out of the legislature by pre-Tea Party guys. And so the number of crossover votes from Republicans has gone down. We need Democrats in there. We need somebody who's not part of that cut. Always you can cut. Those models, if you've been in business and you've seen people do them, there's always, you know, they cut everything and then it all comes back up and so forth. And so, Felicia, this is you went for, you know, a difficult career in the military, dangerous, and but it did send you around the world talking to people as it does so many other people. How do we deal with a situation? Because it's not just education, Mike, right? It's a whole host of other issues, protecting our national environment. I mean, your opponent, Wade, wants to have a nuclear dump in our inner district. I mean, come on, guys. I mean, Mike, this is absurd. So I know that you're interested in environmental issues and you're interested in sustainability. And the military's been sort of in the forefront of moving to renewable energy. For why?
Well, the military has definitely been in the forefront. They've been on the forefront of many things, but the internet, GPS, those, you know, they've medical techniques and all, they've have been proposed by the military or discovered by the military. And the military realizes that if our addiction to oil is causing us to be at the mercy of people who don't necessarily like us in other countries. And it's also a finite resource. So even if people liked us over on the Middle East or whatever, or didn't disagree with us on a lot of things. So they realize that, and it's a national security issue. If we don't have our own independent oil supply or renewable energy supply, and I don't say oil only because that's what everybody's focus seemed to have been on, the Department of Defense is really got into the renewable energy arena because they see it as a national security issue. And I was in Afghanistan and the folks in Iraq, the stats were showing that for every 20 to 22 convoys of fuel to run the generators and the vehicles and all that stuff, one soldier would get killed or one troop. And so that sounds like little, but you think of how many convoys, thousands of convoys we ran both in Afghanistan and Iraq over the 16 years. That's a lot of soldiers being killed, troops being killed for no reason, other than our addiction to oil. And especially over there, and I mean, here you got the sun, you're somewhere in Afghanistan, Iraq, the Middle East, where it's sunshine just as much as Arizona. Why aren't they using solar? So that in our bases. Why are we tied to the grid? It's natural disasters can knock out our grid, as well as terrorists. So why are we tied to it? So they're going with the distributive energy, using renewable energy, solar, wind, even geothermal in many places, the bases to heat up the housing and the barracks. And it makes sense. It's also more cost effective. Save a lot of money and taxpayers' money doing that we could use for other things, i.e. education. So that's why the military is going to. That's why I'm a proponent for it. I actually served a year with the Army Environmental Policy Institute out of Crystal City in the Pentagon area. And working on such issues, and I did my research on that, and that was 12 years ago.
Well, that's so, you know, and that's a Felicia friendship. It's great to hear you say that you have this background in sustainability and in environmental and energy issues. But we have the Koch brothers, who are heavily invested their whole lives. We're talking about, and they've spent millions of dollars to elect people that still have a stake in the oil and gas industry. They have lots and lots and lots of money in that. And so they are, for whatever reason, not as civic minded as Felicia French is. They want to keep selling oil and gas and coal to the military. They want to keep their coal fired plants going, and they put their money where their profit is. They are supporting. So not only are you fighting reason, you are fighting this hugely funded opposition, mm-hmm. that is I wholly owned subsidiary of Koch Industries.
It's hard for ordinary people, Mike, to deal with two guys who are worth $46 billion.
There's four Koch brothers, by the way.
Yeah, but two of them are active politically, Mike. And, you know, it's absolute ton of money. And it, so far, I suspect that... what do they call it, Mike? Americans for Prosperity has an office in Flagstaff, so they're going to be organizing against you guys. It's a Koch brother front. It's been Koch brother. It's their first front that they came up
Mike
with.
Mike Pence's organization is called Freedom Partners. If we want labels.
Here. So you're going to have, and even in local elections here in Sedona, we've had the Tea Party coming in and the Libertarians, which we used to like. I got tired of Libertarians now. coming into the election. And I'm sorry, you guys are going to really have to work your butts off to get your message out there, because you're not going to have as much money as your opponents. And even if you do, it's hard to buy enough time so people can see who you are and what you stand for. It's a really, you know, tough gig, as we used to say. So you're both going to do it. So you're motivated to do this. You've been successful in politics. Felicia, this is your first run for office.
Yes.
And your career is just military, mostly. And Wade is, I don't say just military, I mean, you know, that's been your career. My uncle and grandfathers were so extreme, they didn't even vote until they retired. They believed that they just carried out the decision. So I guess that's eased up now, but in those days, officers just, you know, a lot of them just didn't vote because they wanted to just follow orders and do carry out things. And they assumed there was this broad nonpartisan issue that Mike was talking about earlier, where there was a broad nonpartisan consensus that doesn't exist anymore. So you're forced to be partisan in order to change things, right?
Well, reason has a, and this is for Wade, reason has a liberal bias. I've said this on the show before, that as soon as you become reasonable, as soon as you say, well, gee, maybe we should feed kids some lunches at school or some breakfast at school, and then man, that's a reasonable position, I think, anyway. So I'm going to say it again, reason itself, just normal, what used to be normal and what still is for that matter, a day-to-day concern about health and welfare, about education, about environment, are now liberal positions. And I, the other side has worked very hard to make that happen, between the conservative think tanks, and between the Koch brothers, between the American Legislative Exchange Council that writes you laws. I mean, if you guys make it down to the Arizona State House,
that's what I think. That's what Wade was talking about. They're going to hit you with a whole lot of laws that were written, God knows where, and they'll be introduced over and over by these folks. You've also got, what other issues are important? I know that. In Sedona, particularly, we're very sensitive about the national forest that surrounds us and the underfunding of the Forest Service and the protecting of our lands around us, because we have an economy based on tourism. The last thing we want is anything done to damage our basic industry. But Sylvia Allen is one of the people who basically wants to sell off our federal lands. These are public lands owned by the American people, managed by the government, and she wants to sell them off for the highest bidder, the highest use. And I think Bob Thorpe is certainly right on the line there. So in the legislature, could you shift the balance a little?
Well, I'm a hunter, and I think most hunters that I know of are pro public lands, so you can go out and enjoy the wild land and the wildlife and everything that's out there. And the U.S. Forest Service has a mandate, and it's multiple use, and I still support that. If we can get some agricultural products off of there, we get some ag products, which would be in timber and some livestock grazing and things like that. In some places, that doesn't make sense. There's certain riparian areas that we want to protect. We protect them, but we can still get multiple use off of a vast majority of the public lands out here, and for everybody as much as possible to enjoy them and benefit from them.
Absolutely. When you drive down the highway, folks, and you see those Forest Service signs that say land of many uses, that goes back to the original, almost original, the founding of the Forest Service when they found out that another approach was not a good approach to public lands, that there was a way to get all of the public to support the Wade Carlyle, the hunting Wade Carlyles, and when he's wearing that hat, and the environmental Steve Williamsons and the environmental Felicia French, they all would support these stewards of public lands if before that approach. And when I came to Arizona, I was not aware of it until I moved here as an adult, and I saw this land of many uses thing, and I said,
well, so Wade was referring to hunting, and back east, that's, you know, if you want to hunt a deer, you know, you're going to pay somebody who owns the land a fairly substantial money to hang on. And everywhere you go, it's all private property, except for in Arizona, if the state has a huge area, has two huge areas that you can hunt in. But that's because they're public property. And because otherwise, nobody wants you on their land unless you're going to kick in some bucks. And here you can go all over the place and hunt. I mean, it's all our national land.
I don't know when the last time you bought a hunting license, but there's some serious bucks there, too, at least in my world, anyway.
So, Felicia, can you get in the state legislature? Can you actually shift things? Will you talk about national issues as well as local? And
yes, I will, because we're all tied together, obviously. My focus will make every attempt to do it locally, because that's what I'm running for. But it's like sustainability. It's just concentric circles. You know, you have the economy in the middle, the society and the environment, and they all interwrap. We can't have one without the other. And one of the reasons why most of the people live up in this rural area where it covers LD6 is because of the land, the beauty and the nature here. So if we go out and destroy it, that's most of the reason why people are here, rather than a big metropolitan city. So if that's going to really hurt the economy if you don't continue making sure you take care of those assets that we have, those natural resources. I was lucky enough to go to Africa on a safari, and a lot of the problems with the animals going extinct and the issues there were because the people weren't being good stewards of the land. Then the tribal people started realizing we can actually make more money off of showing people doing photo safaris and showing us instead of us killing off the and not worrying about it. And so they realized it's an economic boom for them. And then they started taking them. Folks could go for 2 years of training to learn how to be a safari guide, and they know everything about every single animal, and it's a part of their education and a good career path.
We're talking to Felicia French, candidate for the Arizona State House. We have this on Democratic Perspectives this morning. We have Wade Carlyle, candidate for the Arizona State Senate, both for LD6, the legislative district. You know, political people like us throw around things like LD and CD. The legislative district, of course, means state, and then CD means federal. But so we have these two candidates that are asking for your vote, Felicia French and Wade Carlyle. We also want to thank right now, we want to thank the people that support Democratic Perspective. We have our wonderful friends at DOR, Democrats of the Red Rocks, who have their wonderful breakfasts every month and bring in some great speakers like these candidates. You want to check out the DOR breakfasts and the speakers over at the old Sedona Bar and Grill on Thursdays, third Thursdays. We want to thank Steve Segner and his crew over at El Portal, a great supporters. We want to thank Silent Gary, the master, who continues to support us from up there in the frozen north somewhere.
And our regular contributors, we want to thank everyone who came to our fundraiser. We did very well. We're solid. We're not going out of business in next week or anything.
Well,
we can pay the station their due. That's one reason we're independent. Can say anything we want, right, Mike?
That's right. I can say, Kate, Cactus Kate, keep the Jamesons cold. I'll be there soon. We got a lot going on. We have a lot of great shows coming up.
Yeah.
We got some, for you environmental folks,
we've got a real good mix of national issues and local issues.
Yeah, exactly.
A real good
mix.
And we want to thank these candidates. They'll be around. They'll be in Sedona. They're going to be in Cottonwood. They're running traditional. They're going to have to raise money. Money is something we don't like talking about, but we just thank people because without it, these guys can't run and can't be heard. So you should consider even if you've never made a political donation, of looking for good candidates and supporting them. You have to do this in order to get change.
And it's really true that any amount, you know, there are people that will argue with this, but that we have a donate button on the website. Go to it. And we want to, don't forget, our podcast, this and all our shows are on bbid.org. Thank you.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news and our Saturday replay after the noon news right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.